This episode is brought to you by the Election Network. It is the final part of our three-part series exploring democracy and human rights from the lens of women in Nigeria.
Over the last couple of episodes in this series, we've dug into the unique obstacles and challenges that Nigerian women face when they make the courageous decision to run for office. In episode one, through the story of Benue State politician Sewu Esebem, we explored the various levels of prejudice women encounter during election campaigns.
When I picked up my form to run for office, there were certainly pushbacks against me. There were pushbacks because of my gender and some because of my age in 2019. They were like, what would a young woman want to run for office? Why shouldn't she just go get married? Some even say into my face that, why aren't you trying to look at a family or something?
And in episode two, through the story of Kogi State politician Natasha Akpoti-Duahan, we learned about the political intimidation and violence women in politics face.
Yesterday, the mother of Ojo Inesi, the youth leader who was murdered by the same APC thugs, was attacked in her home. Also attacked was the woman who led the Ihima women protest a few weeks ago. Also, two brothers in Adawi local government were stabbed for voting Natasha. These three instances I mentioned are episodes that are currently occurring to my supporters.
We also learned of a sobering reality. The exorbitant cost of politics often means that the average woman cannot afford to participate.
In reality, you have to print, you have to advertise, you have to speak to constituents, you have to do a lot of things, and these things cost money. And the reality is that the average woman doesn't make as much as the man. Like there's when you look at the economics of things, women are not as economically empowered as men in Nigeria society today.
There are also other blockers for women, including a lack of institutional support, as well as cultural and religious sentiments. There's no sugarcoating it. These are formidable obstacles for women in political participation. But you see, this episode is about the solutions. It's about what you and I can do from the comfort of our homes to create an even playing field for Nigerian women in governance and politics. Hi, my name is Aisha Salahuddin, and I like girls. This is a narrative storytelling podcast about African women and the different experiences life throws at us for being women. In this episode, two women, Sholakwe Shonuga and Miriam Mero Ibrahim, who both work in the development space and whom you've heard from in previous episodes, will help me understand the steps we need to take to support and encourage Nigerian women as they navigate the demanding world of campaigning and contesting.
Now, lawmakers in Nigeria have rejected a bill seeking to empower women and promote gender equality. Senator Biodun Olujimi has been forced again to withdraw the draft law after her male colleagues in the National Assembly objected, citing socio-cultural and Islamic concerns. So, yet another setback in the quest to improve the lot of women in Nigeria.
We'll get to the gist of the equality bill before the end of this episode. But what I really wanted to underscore with that news clip from 2 years ago is the extent to which cultural and religious stereotypes contribute to the discrimination against women, especially in matters related to politics. This discrimination is the reason women who decide to run for office are often told it's no place for them and that they should instead focus on starting a family.
I think that in terms of cultural and religious barriers, and you know, all the norms that we've grown up.
That's Sholakwe Shonuga. She's the policy and strategic partnerships manager at ElectHer. ElectHer is a not-for-profit organization in Nigeria that is focused on advancing women's representation in political leadership. I asked Sholakwe to talk about cultural reorientation. You know, ways we can change people's cultural perceptions about women running for office.
To be honest, cultural reorientation, I think it's just a way to cap it up. And reorientation can happen in different ways. So it could happen tailored through, you know, media support, where people see on TV, right, that a woman's place is not just in the kitchen. And this could be like your regular, you know, soap operas that people watch in the afternoon when they're chilling at home, or in music, where people don't sing about women in derogatory terms.
That's a really good answer. I mean, we all know how influential the media is when it comes to creating and shaping narratives about gender roles. And by showcasing TV shows, news reports, movies, and even music that presents women in diverse and empowering roles, far removed from traditional gender expectations, we leverage this powerful platform to reshape societal views. It's why I love Nigerian movies and shows like Lionheart and MTV Sugar.
What are you talking about?
Mohini, being rude to your father. Is that what they are teaching you in the university?
Mom, I was just trying to let daddy know that women should not be treated less than men. It's unfair.
Oh God, I love MTV Sugar. And bringing it back to politics.
Mrs. Phillips, tell me, how does it feel to be the first female PPM gubernatorial candidate?
I know that I'm the best person for the role, irrespective of gender.
Good evening, Your Excellency.
Even better than your husband?
Consistently seeing and hearing more stories about women in politics in our movies, like the 2019 film Love is War, from which the clip you just heard is taken, helps us gradually transform societal attitudes about the role of women in governance and politics. Okay, back to Sholakwe.
In terms of reorientation, being able to engage with religious leaders, these religious leaders, that's something that people are starting to do a lot more. Engaging with religious leaders, engaging with traditional leaders, because there's only so little that, you know, your regular development agency or your regular civil society organization can do. But if they're hearing it from the pastor's mouth or from the imam's mouth directly, saying that, you know, why doesn't Sister Agnes run for this, or why doesn't, you know, Hajia do this, then I think that it's easier like that.
This makes sense. Traditional and religious leaders play a big role in the social, political, and economic lives of citizens in Nigeria. In episode 2, we discussed customary laws and how these laws recognize the authority of these local elites. It means they have the power to influence how people think about the role of women in politics and governance. And because they do, we must continuously engage with them on the importance of having women run for office. This way, they can in turn communicate this importance to their people or followers. So, we know that part of changing how people perceive women in politics and governance is by advocating for more women-centered content in the media, right? That means more writers writing and pitching diverse stories that don't demean women, more newsrooms adopting gender-sensitive reporting, and more streaming services greenlighting stories that don't have women in traditional roles alone. However, for all of this to be successful, we need to keep the conversation going around the clock, emphasizing the crucial importance of women's representation in politics and governance.
It depends on how you want, but I believe in dialogue a lot. I'm growing into seeing the benefits of dialogue.
That's Miriam Mero Ibrahim. She's a development lawyer and the publicity secretary for the Young Women in Politics Forum, Abuja, Nigeria. The Young Women in Politics Forum is an organization with a focus on capacity building to increase the level of women's participation in leadership and political roles.
I think collaboration is very needed. We cannot stand alone. I keep on trying to repeat this. Well, I do repeat it in spaces where women gather, is the issue with women's rights in Nigeria is not a women's only issue. It's an issue that affects society as a whole. So women's organizations can be the champions in fixing these issues, but it's not a standalone issue for women's organizations.
I get this. Encouraging the participation of women in politics and governance requires engaging in dialogue with a wide range of stakeholders, not just women. For example, whether it's about incorporating more women-centered stories in traditional media or persuading traditional leaders to recognize the importance of women in politics, we are likely to find ourselves in discussions with men and the broader society. Therefore, in our conversations about the role of women in politics and governance, it's essential to include everyone, irrespective of their identity or their current views on women.
I used to look down on the effects of conversations, but really a lot of great things just start from ideas, and mostly ideas come from conversations. So Nigerian women should not shut up. Nigerian men too should not shut up about the things that concern us. And there needs to be a lot of learning to be done. A lot of learning and teaching.
I don't need convincing on the importance of having people like me in leadership positions. But you'd be surprised at the number of people who require justification for women's participation in politics. What should be said to those individuals? Sholakwe provided some answers.
The first thing is that it makes our society truly representative. Like, it shows that, or it actually ensures that everybody's voice is heard. And so let me give an example of something that women go through perhaps every month. Periods. There's a lot of issues that young girls are having with their periods, not having access to pads, not having access to, you know, things like that. And there's a lot of campaigns and all of that. But have you ever heard at maybe like a state assembly or a local government or even the National Assembly ever even thinking about raising these kind of issues? Because it's something that is affecting a lot of young girls in Nigeria. But it's not something that is talked about, because they wouldn't even think about it, because it's not their reality. It's not something that they can ever even relate to, even in the slightest.
I really appreciate this point, because it's so true. The increased presence of women in politics and governance will lead to greater attention to women's priorities. Nigeria is predominantly governed by men. And if we're being honest, they don't understand women's issues, such as gender pay gap, maternal mortality, or period poverty, simply because these issues do not reflect their own reality. Having more women in power means that these issues can at least begin to be addressed.
All around the world, studies have been done. Studies have been made that what actually is the impact of women's representation. And more than representation and more than being able to have a voice for women and children, we find that when women are in political leadership, there's more policy considerations for things that would affect socioeconomic development and things that would affect the social and, you know, the social and financial well-being of people in the society.
What Sholakwe is suggesting is not a stretch. Numerous studies from the Center for Study of Democratic Institutions, the UN, the National Democratic Institute, King's College London, and like a dozen other reputable organizations have demonstrated that a greater representation for women in power is linked to an increase in policy making that enhances the quality of life. For example, in India, a greater number of drinking water projects are associated with higher levels of female representation. And honestly, women are not a minority. In Nigeria, we constitute roughly half of the country's population. For our political institutions to be truly democratic and responsive to all citizens, they must include women. In March 2022, hundreds of Nigerian women gathered in protest following the National Assembly's rejection of 5 bills aimed at promoting gender equality in the country.
They are determined to be heard. These Nigerian women say the country's laws are discriminatory and they want change. But standing in their way are their predominantly male legislators.
Beyond everything we've discussed so far, One way to create a level playing field for women in governance and politics is through legislative support. This means having the country's National Assembly pass laws that consider women's needs and promote their representation. But here's the frustrating reality. Nigerian lawmakers persistently shoot down gender-focused bills, with the five equality bills serving as the latest examples of their opposition to equitable change. The equality bills, which were first introduced to the Nigerian Senate in March 2016 and underwent all sorts of changes in name and form, have been rejected three times.
It's ludicrous that the Nigerian National Assembly, which is dominated by men, do not seem to appreciate, or no, let me put it clearly, they have disdain for the women of Nigeria.
We are normalizing a male-dominated constitution, and all these things are why we are here today.
Nigerian women are in chain. Nigerian women are in chain. We cannot speak out. We are not part of the decision-making. We have a male parliament.
In 2016, the Nigerian Senate threw out an earlier version of the equality bills. At the time, it was called the Gender Parity and Prohibition of Violence Against Women Bill. The lawmakers threw it out because, get this, giving women the power of equality was an apostasy.
That a woman can do whatever she likes will give rise to a situation where in our northern language, the Hausa language that is said, Mijin Hajia, you become Mijin Hajia at the end of the day, where your woman can move around, interact anyhow, under your watch. This, Mr. President, is an apostasy.
This may not be the perfect analogy, but the closest translation for Mijin Hajia in English is a simp. It's typically used in mockery to describe men who are overly attentive or submissive to their wives. In the context of the bill that was rejected, the senators believed that granting women equal rights would imply that men are simps, so they rejected the bill. This is just one of many examples illustrating how religious and cultural stereotypes contribute to prejudice against women.
Those in favor that the bill be read the second time, say aye.
Aye.
Those against, say nay.
Nay.
The nays have it.
Now, back to the five equality bills that were rejected in 2022 for the third time. You know, the ones that led to the massive protests in cities in Nigeria. Those five rejected bills included provisions like granting citizenship to foreign-born husbands of Nigerian women. For context, the Nigerian Constitution already confers automatic citizenship on foreign-born wives of Nigerian men. Another significant proposal within these bills aimed to allocate 35% of legislative seats to women and reserve a similar percentage of leadership positions within political parties for women. These amendments were rejected for reasons that range from cultural and religious objections to arguments by senators who believe that since the Nigerian Constitution already upholds women's rights clearly, there's no need for additional pro-women legislation. Really?
The fact that we even need those bills is indicator of how far behind we are when it comes to gender equality in Nigeria.
That's Mera Mero highlighting just how terrible the state of play is. And Sholagbe feels the same way about the constant rejection of these bills.
Something that I know that is a norm in the National Assembly is that when something has the word equality in it, it's immediately thrown out. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to listen to it. They are not even interested in how it will put money in their pocket or how it will better their lives. Equality? What rubbish is this? A woman cannot be equal.
It's true. There's something about women seeking representation that makes the rest of society angry at their audacity. By the way, the good news is that after the slate of protests by Nigerian women following the third rejection in 2022, three of the five bills were reopened for consideration at the National Assembly. By May 2023, the bills passed the second reading in the Senate, However, the Senate went on break shortly afterwards, and there's been little progress regarding them since. There's a lot of fighting and protesting that needs to happen for better inclusion of women in governance and politics in Nigeria, from conversations to media reorientation and legislative support. And it's a long and painful journey, but it's not a hopeless one. There are a couple of non-profits, CSOs, women groups, and private sector organizations that constantly advocate for women's inclusion in politics and governance. Like ELECTHA, where Sholakwe works.
ELECTHA is a non-partisan, not-for-profit organization that is focused on advancing women's representation in political leadership, yes, but not just political leadership, in public life.
But speaking on the aspect of political leadership as it affects this episode, ELECTHA has a lot of cool initiatives that support women's inclusion in politics. For example, in the moments leading up to the 2023 Nigerian elections, they launched something called the Agenda 35 campaign.
My name is Simi Olushola, and I'm running for a State House of Assembly seat in Ekiti.
My name is Marilyn Okawa-Daramo. I am from Ikano State Local Government in Delta State. I'm running to represent the good people of
the ELECTHA campaign aimed to mobilize both human and financial resources to support women running for office in the 2023 elections. Its objective was to use the campaign to build a strong voter base for these women. Another organization supporting the inclusion of women in politics and governance is the Women in Politics Forum. Miriam is a member of the Abuja chapter of the Young Women in Politics Forum, which is pretty much a subset of the former.
So what Young Women in Politics Forum is doing with us, Young Women in Politics Forum, is identifying women, young women who are interested in politics, you know, and building capacity, bringing us together as a group to not only network, but collaborate for increased, you know, political representation of young women.
The Women in Politics Forum also has some impressive initiatives. They provide mentorship and training for women politicians to assist with capacity building. Additionally, they also advocate for gender bills and policies, taking their efforts to political parties, the government, and the media.
The Women in Politics Forum has called on political parties and elected members of the National Assembly to uphold the provisions of the National Gender Policy and be gender inclusive in the selection of principal officers in the 10th Assembly. President of the forum, Ebere Ifeindu, made the call at a media briefing in Abuja on the representation of women in the parliament.
So, yes, there are quite a number of organizations and groups working hard to ensure women find space in politics. But we still need more, or at least we need more people to support and join the ones that currently exist. Changing the status quo is a long and painful journey. It will take years of lobbying, of dialogue, of media presence, of fighting stereotypes. So these groups need all the support they can get.
So one thing that I hear a lot, right, when I talk about stuff like this is people always feel like the average person sitting in the comfort of their home cannot really do anything to help increase representation of women in politics and governance. In your, like, can you just talk a bit, and I feel like you've covered this a lot, but just for, like, the specifics of, oh, I'm just a random person in my house, what can I possibly do to, like, increase representation or support women in governance and politics? What can the average person do to, like, make a small change, just tiny dents, like, in the status quo?
How do I even start? Let me ask you, do you watch Big Brother?
So me personally, I see clips, yes.
Okay, same. I see clips. I don't watch it, yeah. Right? Yeah. I have never gone to my TV and switched on Big Brother.
That's Sholakwe, by the way. And no, this is not a Big Brother hate party. She's going somewhere with this.
But I know Erica's name. I know Lekon's Same. Name. I know the two of them had a tiff in the house. I know Erica had to leave the house. And millions was raised for her, right? There's a level of support that people provide to these kinds of platforms that you have, like, you know, you don't have a doubt in your mind that this person is supported and that what they are doing will be supported in the long term. Why can't we do that? These are average citizens that are raising millions of money for somebody to go and live a comfortable life. Like, kudos to her, you know, for having access to that kind of a fan base. But why don't our women in politics have that kind of a fan base too?
I fully understand Cholakwe's point. If we can enthusiastically offer financial and human support to reality TV stars like Erica, who was disqualified from the Big Brother house in 2020, then surely we can mobilize and support women seeking to represent us in politics, right? All it takes is a little bit of interest and curiosity about those who can quite literally shape policies and laws that directly affect the outcomes of our lives.
We don't even need that level of support. I feel like if that level of support is available, fantastic. But if we're just a little bit interested and a little bit supportive, retweets on social media when you see that women are doing good things would go a long way. Being able to advocate for these things when behind closed doors, on social media as well, in person, is fantastic.
Not everyone is in a position to start a fundraiser or financially support their preferred female candidate running for office. But everyone can advocate for women's rights and their inclusion in politics. You can tweet about it, repost news reports of women contesting for office on Facebook. You can register to become a voter to support women in the upcoming elections. These seemingly small contributions, when compounded, can eventually accumulate to provide significant support for women running for office.
We don't need an NGO or a CSO to even start that movement. We can start it ourselves. So many movements are organic. A lot of things can be done if you just kind of like exercise that level of interest. Like, just be interested first, like be genuinely interested. And there's so much that could be done. But I think that lending your voice, educating other people, participating in advocacy movements and things like that, you know, I think is the first step in the right direction.
Yeah, no, you're right. I feel like most people overthink it. They think they have to do something big in order to, like, support. Yeah, like, but it's little things like calling out the misogyny in that space or retweeting or support. Yeah, people overthink it. Like, oh, no, I have to do something dramatic. So I guess this is a great...
Through writing and researching episodes for this series, it's become clear that the path for increased female representation in political leadership is a marathon, not a sprint. It's not for today, tomorrow, or even next year. It requires continuous building and repeated conversations about the importance of having women in the political arena.
Do you have any predictions for the future? Like, when you think about women being able to participate more in politics without like hindrances, like, is the future hopeful for you, let's say 5-10 years from now, or are you skeptical that based on history you're not sure like anything will change?
That question was for Miriam. As I finished asking, I looked up at my screen and realized that she was laughing.
Why are you laughing?
Because you said 5-10 years from now. Frankly, Aisha, 5-10 years from now is like tomorrow. If there's anything I've learned, 5-10 years from now is like tomorrow. So and you've answered that it's a long game. But see, I'm not a quitter, so I'm going to be very optimistic in my answer. It is possible for things to get better. More women are showing interest in politics than they ever have, although it's not translating into the seats we are getting. But I can tell you for sure that more people are being interested in politics, and politics is a numbers game. So let's increase the numbers, increase the awareness, and hopefully let's see what 2027 has to offer us.
Miriam's skepticism is entirely understandable. Despite making progress over time, women in politics are perpetually playing a game of catch-up, with Nigeria still lacking gender balance in governance and political leadership across several levels. So approaching things with caution makes sense. However, I appreciate that even though she has accepted that achieving the inclusion of women in politics will take a very long time, more than 10 years, she's not giving up. She plans to continue mobilizing, engaging in dialogue, and supporting aspiring politicians. Honestly, that's the only way forward. Interestingly, Sholakpe shares this perspective.
Perhaps I wouldn't say I'm not optimistic. But I've also learned to manage my expectations and be realistic in my dreams and my ambitions and in my dreams for Nigeria as a whole. But I do think that for us to keep on doing the things that we're doing, we need to have a certain level of hope. If not, why are we waking up in the morning and say we're doing development work? We can't kid ourselves, right? But I just think that in our doings, there's a certain level of hope, but there's also a certain level of realism. I do believe that in the next 10 years, there should be better representation. I'm very hopeful that before the end of this administration, some gender-responsive bills will be passed.
That's very well said. We know that improving the landscape of women in politics and governance in Nigeria will be difficult and lengthy. But we must persevere, right? It's the only path forward. Although it's a long and daunting journey, we must acknowledge the progress made from a past where women were denied the right to vote and stand for election, to now, with women serving in cabinets and occupying seats in the National Assembly. The struggle for inclusion is far from over, but if history is anything to go by, it's that change will come, slowly but surely. Thank you for listening to this episode of I Like Girls, supported by the Election Network and Document Women. If you'd like to get in touch with us, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at I Like Girls Gang. This episode was written and produced by me, Aisha Salahuddin. Audio engineering and sound design were handled by Mo Isu, and our editor is Peter Akinosi. The news clips you heard throughout this episode were obtained from Arise TV, DW News, and AIT. Special thanks to Sholakpe Shonuga and Miriam Mero Ibrahim for their contributions to this episode. I'll catch you next season.